to what we're talking about today. Titled,
okay.
For years, a Catholic priest used one wrong word during baptism. Church now says rituals are invalid. So, time and again, Pastor Andreas Arango poured holy water on the heads of his parishioners during baptismal ceremonies, performing the Catholic sacrament that signifies the reversal of all past sins and the birth of an innocent person. We baptize you in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, Arango, a priest in the Diocese of Phoenix, repeated during myriad ceremonies. But Arango misused one word. He was supposed to say, I baptize you. He said, we baptize you. And now, 1,500 baptisms are null and void.
What? But we as him, Jesus, God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, so here's...
That's the week.
This is my conspiracy theory. Now, he stepped out.
Okay.
Kind of feel like he did this on purpose. He's got a whole harem of little baby souls all for him when he gets down to hell.
Oh, my God.
Because as we know, proper planning prevents piss-poor pedophilia.
Catholicism. Oh, my...
You wanted to read this fucking article for that terrible joke.
He wanted to use his alliteration skills.
Don't worry, I tagged all the advertisements, Catholic Church, the Vatican, the Pope, all everything, everywhere. So
Say
we're going to have a lot of angry...
Piss poor...
Proper planning prevents piss poor pedophilia.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ, that's fine.
Do you know what I think
He didn't say I.
When I think of Catholicism, I always say it wrong. I think of the bread of God is bread. And that's the whole vibe. It doesn't mean anything.
And with your spirit.
Yeah.
Just to confuse me.
They've been saying stuff wrong from day one. Nothing they say makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I went to my cousin's wedding like in the summer, and I hadn't been to church in forever.
Ugh, it's the worst.
And I'm like, I don't do it, but I'm like not going to stir shit up on a wedding. So I'm like,
Yeah,
you know, peace be with you. And it's the first time someone hit me with, and with your spirit, I like
Ooh.
Audibly went, fuck?
You got tricked.
Fuck? I was completely thrown off.
Steve, you haven't been to church in a really long time then. Like a real long time. This has been changed. And I'm not even Catholic, and I know this.
I went to Mass when my grandmother died, and that was like... I don't know, 8-9 years ago, and I got caught off guard, and they changed a whole lot of stuff. There's extra like kneeling, just kneel if you can. I'm not coordinated enough to like walk down.
Like, I like the John Mulaney joke where he's like, they changed all that stuff, but nothing that was actually important.
Yeah,
that's cool. So we're just repeating comedians' jokes now.
I'm just saying I like his joke.
That's very cool.
Great joke, Jenna.
Leave me alone. I like John Mulaney. You can shove it up your butt if you don't. All right?
I know.
Well, he's shoving it up Olivia Munn's butt, so.
I don't
how you
John
make a
Mulaney.
Baby. Mm-hmm, Steve. I like this John Mulaney slander.
I like John Mulaney. I just don't like John Mulaney as much as John Mulaney likes cocaine.
Aww. Fine, I'll let you have that. Truth is truth. What am I? I saw some cocaine this weekend. Not in my body, but I saw it some other places.
You know, yeah, that's a really fucking wild thing to say. I saw some cocaine this weekend.
I saw some cocaine this weekend.
I saw it. I didn't.
Did
I don't
it smell
do that.
Funny?
Stop. I saw it. I seen it.
You seen it.
I seen
and
it.
And what did that lead up to?
I went to sleep. Excuse me.
But you made a friend.
No, I did. Oh my God. I did not make a friend.
You made a friend because you were like teasing me with the story and I got real excited.
I wasn't trying
and then
to tease you with anything. I was just telling you what happened.
Yeah.
It wasn't, honestly, I didn't think.
You started the story with going, so I was in bed with this girl during the bachelorette party and all of a sudden I finally was going to listen to something you said. And then what happened, Jenna?
Well, I took my shoes off. After we were out at the club, and I was like, oh, sorry, guys, if my feet smell, because I've been sweating. And she comes up, and she was like, I bet your feet don't smell. And I was like, I bet you they do, and we'll leave it at that. And she picks up my foot like a like a loaf of bread. Like it was like, I don't know, like she hadn't like eaten, like she hadn't eaten in like years. And like my foot like was the first piece of food she saw. And she takes it and she takes my foot all the way up to her whole face, my whole foot. And she sniffs like with all her might. And she said, "Your feet smell so fucking good." And like screamed. And then I was like, okay. And she picks it up again. I was like, I know they don't. And she literally picked up my foot again and did it again. And then I just was like, I gotta go to bed. This is enough. After she had been continuously rubbing her body all over my body at the club. And mind you, I thought it was all fun. We were just having fun. You know, like it wasn't a big deal. Like, I don't care. I don't like to dance. So I was more like annoyed. Like,
nor should you after having your foot reconstructed. Right.
I was more like, stop, because I'm not dancing. Like that. I don't want to dance.
You don't like to dance?
I have to be pretty drunk to like to dance. I have a rod in my back, so there's only so many moves I can
Jenna's
do.
About half titanium.
Yeah,
at this
my
point.
Foot doesn't work real well, and neither does my back. Yeah. So they were like, "What's your signature move?" And I was like, "The shimmy, obviously." So I shimmied a lot, but I'm not out there freaking getting it twerking. I can't. I literally cannot. I have a rod in my entire back. Like I can't arch my back. So
I'm not out there getting it twerking.
So, yeah. So it was just there was a lot going on. I'm glad she wasn't like, "You suck and I hate you." I was getting lots of compliments. It just really took me by surprise. I've only like ever met one person that had a foot fetish before. So this was.
How do you know she had a foot fetish?
I wonder. I wonder what it was that.
I think you're kink shaming.
Yeah, we don't kink shame on the show, Jenna.
Did I say?
I'm just shaming your story for not getting me as excited as I hoped it would.
Like, what were you? What do you want me to do? Go to a party and hook up with a girl?
If you got a cool story,
like,
yeah.
Like, if you went to a party and hooked up with a man, I would be livid. Not
listen,
be,
we just
not,
watched the Vito storyline of Sopranos. I don't need to be sad.
Not
right?
Because you would be gay. I would be sad because you would have cheated on me. Don't you consider that cheating?
I don't care if you sleep with a woman.
How does that makes no sense?
It makes complete sense.
Honestly, I hate when men are like this. It just makes me like realize how like awful men are all over again.
There we go. Feed into that energy. How bad men are. You know who are great? Women.
They are really great.
Yeah. Well, when you tell me you're at a bachelorette party of 15 women, I really thought the odds were in my favor to get a cool story. So
I had lots of cool stories. They just weren't sexual. Not good. Scott goes, "Did you see any boobs?" I was like, "Yeah, obviously." But I'm when I see a boob, I go, "Oh, that's a boob."
Oh, yeah. You guys, you see a boob, you're like, "Oh, it's a boob." I show my sack to somebody, and it's like fucking 911.
Have you seen your sack? A boob is beautiful.
Thank you.
A sack?
I got a hot take.
On sacks?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Boobs are cool.
Yeah. See? How do you feel about sacks?
Sacks are whack.
Sacks are whack. Not that cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Boobs? Very cool.
I got a lot of pics on my phone of boobs. Lots of cleave.
I have accidentally seen some of them.
Sorry.
I don't care. Say sorry to your friends. Don't say sorry to me.
It's all right. It's fine. But yeah, that's what I did this weekend. I puked the most I ever puked in my entire life. I made it all into the area it needed to go. And
that's a first.
Yeah, that's a first for me. And I don't regret drinking that much.
I bartended every goddamn day and was awake for 40 hours straight.
Yeah,
so.
And then Scott yelled at me like it was my, like I was a bad person for going out and having fun while he worked.
Oh, I had fun. I made a lot of money. I had fun. I just wanted to murder everybody. That's all.
Did you do anything fun this weekend, Steve? Did you puke or bartend?
I watched the Halo HCS Anaheim instead of the Super Bowl with a couple of the boys.
You didn't? Do you not care about football?
He likes football, but he likes the football of the foot.
You like the football with that makes sense to be named that.
Soccer ball.
Soccer ball.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck about football. I mean, I did watch some of the game, but like. The thing is that's really funny is that like everyone get like everyone like gets all horny for and like watches the Super Bowl. But like at the end of the day, like I'm not even like a big football fan, but I know about football because I'm like a white man in America.
Right.
Right. It's like always like the worst game of the year because like it's the same thing that happens in like with the World Cup and shit, where like people watch World Cup and they're like, some people go, this isn't very interesting. It seems like the teams aren't really going for it. And it's like, yeah, it's like super high pressure single game scenario. So teams tend to play more reservedly.
I didn't really watch it, but I feel like it was because my mom was watching it. What was I doing? Homework. And she was like, oh, it's a close game. It's an exciting game. So
I like football. I think the whole postseason was great. I enjoyed watching all my regulars lose all their money, and I hope that the other bartender, Nick, who is a Cincinnati fan, did not beat his wife and children after they lost.
I hope that also. I hope that did not happen. Jesus Christ, Scott.
Well, he's got anger issues.
Okay, let's just play everybody's personal problems out there.
I didn't save his last name. Anyway, I told the priest story because it was funny.
Yeah.
And also because today's movie, which Jenna picked.
I did. I did a good job. Go me. 5 stars for Jenna.
Wow. We didn't even get to that part. You're jumping to like the hour 10 mark, all right? It is a great movie. And what movie did we pick? Or did you pick?
Thirst.
Bye.
Bye.
Park Chan-wook.
Oh, damn.
By a Korean man.
Podcasting then, aren't we?
Jenna, you're great.
I feel like I always say it wrong. So
Park Chan-wook. There's literally a man in this movie whose name was like one syllable away from being kangaroo. So yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah, that's what his name is.
Korean names are super fun.
They're fun.
And we're going to have a lot of Korean names soon as we go and roll this goddamn commercial. Okay, so obviously we've done Park Chan-wook before when we did Old Boy about 6-7 episodes ago. But as a very, 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 very quick refresher, a little bit of his background. One of South Korea's most acclaimed directors, known for the Vengeance trilogy. Of course, that includes Old Boy, which we talked about, Mr. Vengeance and Lady Vengeance. He was also, you know, worked on Snowpiercer, which is a really great movie, as well as a television show, which I've not watched. Other movies, I'm a Cyborg, but that's okay. Born in Seoul, South Korea, went to Sogang University, nation's oldest Catholic Jesuit institution. Obviously, in a lot of his movies, including this one, he's got some opinions on the Catholic Church. I don't know if he's necessarily a full-blown atheist, but I know he's got some issues with that.
Clearly.
And then that's pretty much all I'm going to remind you guys. If you really want to know that much about him, go listen to the Old Boy episode. It has no Steve and Jenna being confused as they say Korean names.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
I'm fluent in Korean, so.
Yeah? Let's hear something.
Yeah, it sounds like Chinese or whatever.
Literally sounds.
Yeah, it all sounds the same. Like at all. Yeah. All clicks and whistles to Steve.
Oh, you're going to tell me that it doesn't sound anything like Chinese? Really?
Have you ever heard of Vietnamese? That sounds super different.
That is very angry language.
That's
wow.
Angry.
Wait, you think Vietnamese is like Korean? You don't be so racist.
Oh my God. Steve, I wish you were here. You would get these hands, I'm telling you.
Oh, you couldn't do anything. You could never defeat me.
Look at how big my hands are for a woman.
I'm but literally playing weird, Crusader Kings. I have no idea what you're showing me.
Are you playing Crusader Kings in Korea?
Korean Kings, yeah.
Are you playing against Koreans?
Maybe.
I'm playing in the Korea of the North, Iceland.
Oh, the Korea of the North.
Yeah,
not to be mistaken for North Korea.
Oh, yeah, what? You've lost me.
Steve's playing against a bunch of North Koreans right now. What?
The baby's here.
Yes, you told me that the baby. Yes, your friend had a baby. We're all real impressed. You dragged that ginormous woman. Yeah, it's a baby.
She just sent a picture.
Yeah.
A baby.
Yeah, that's. You literally dragged that broad to a bachelorette party.
I didn't do it. She volunteered.
Broad dragger.
She didn't come to the crazy part.
Sequel to Snowpiercer. Broad dragger.
She came to the brunch and she made a charcuterie board with a penis on it. It was made out of meats and cheeses and it had big old balls. Oh, it was awesome. God.
Can we talk about the beautiful movie that we watched instead of your dick-cooterie?
All right.
Thirst, from 2009.
Park Chan-wook.
Thank you, Jenna.
I redeemed myself. Brilliant.
Based on Emile Zola, French writers, Therese Raquin, which was his third novel released in the periodical in France, Les Artistes, in 1867. It is basically the same exact story, except instead of a priest, the guy's a painter. So this is all pretty much based off of...
I'm glad I like the priest better.
I'm just happy to see a priest with a woman. It makes me feel a lot more or less concerned.
I was rooting for him. I was like, hell yeah, you get that.
Hell yeah, prince. King.
Ew.
King of kings, lord of lords. Speaking of which... We should probably just do the cast real quick before we get into the story and give some opinions and stuff. We have a lot of Korean names that none of you are going to probably remember, but you might recognize them. We have Song Kang-ho as Sang-hyun, a Catholic priest who volunteers to be a patient for the Emmanuel virus, which, unlike the Emmanuel films from the 70s, does not involve taking all your clothes off. He does, however, become a vampire after receiving blood from an unknown origin, and then has to struggle with the fact that he is, you know, a vampire. I also think one of my favorite things about this was that when they're in, for some reason, he has to go to Africa to do this study, which is interesting because we couldn't figure out where in Africa he was.
Yeah, we were arguing about it, and Scott was like, it's not important to the story, Jenna. And I was like, I just need to know.
Jenna doesn't realize that, like, all of Africa was conquered by the French at one point. Because they're filthy people.
Scott, I know that it was conquered by lots of whites. I'm aware of that. The whites...
Lots of whites.
The whites are trash from all over. I understand that, but I can't remember everything, okay? My God. Literally, I have a history class right now. It's just about America in the Revolutionary War. That's a few years. I can't remember one thing. My teacher goes, great job, Jenna. I don't know what I just wrote, but thank you for the A. It's like, I'm just like, looking at the book, typing it in smarter words.
Okay. Plagiarizing?
Not plagiarizing. I'm paraphrasing.
Mm.
Plagiarism is literally taking it and copying it word
thank
for word.
Thank you for telling that to the English major. I'm well aware
how it works.
So don't
tell me I'm plagiarizing.
Anyway.
I'm saying the knowledge doesn't stay inside my brain. Once I write it, and then it just pops right back out.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. So French and Dutch. Boo.
Boo. British, totally great people.
Yeah, British, great.
Never did anything
Never
wrong.
Never did one wrong thing.
Anyway, Song Kang-ho, you might recognize from Parasite. Which is also one of my favorite movies. He is the father in that. And he was also in both Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Lady Vengeance as well as a ton of other Korean movies like DMZ, which was what made Park Chan-wook famous because that was his big movie. Because obviously if you're in Korea and you do a movie about the DMZ, you're bound to be very popular because, you know, they got some issues over there. I did like when they were in Africa before Jenna confused me for tangent that the first thing I noticed, which I never really caught the first time I watched this, when the guy's talking about the EV virus, it sounds like he's saying Eve because we know from the Bible, Eve is kind of problematic.
Is a bitch.
Do you know what I was watching?
Fucked a snake, ate an apple.
I was watching this thing. Now, obviously, it was on TikTok, so take this with a grain of salt, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, in the whatever, fruit is just a word for vagine. And when they say that, or it's for privates, whatever, and they say that she ate the fruit, she really, they had sex. And then she was pregnant. And so Cain and Abel, one of them is the devil's child. And one of them is...
I bet I can guess which one.
Yeah, but like that was the whole story. And then I'm like, oh my God, I bet that's the truth.
Where was biblical Maury when you need him, you know?
Right?
You are the sinner.
So to be fair, like, cut her some slack. She was just horny, my God.
Anything else, Miss Feminist? No, you're thinking about stuff. Get out of here.
When she starts thinking, it's no good.
No. You have women start smelling your feet otherwise. Anyway, rest of the cast. Kim Ok-bin as Taiju, a young wife of Sang-hyun's childhood friend, who we'll get to in a minute, who's tired of her mundane life. Kim Ok-bin became an actress by winning a contest in Korea.
Really?
Yes.
She's real good.
Yeah, she's insane in this movie.
She's fantastic.
She goes from, like, bitch-slapped orphan girl that's basically a slave to unhinged psychopath. Pretty damn quickly.
Yeah, I liked her through and through.
That's why we had to take away the scissors from the house all of a sudden. We have Kim Hae-suk, a longtime Korean actress, as Mrs. Ra. If you couldn't figure it out, Mrs. Ra and Therese Raquen. That's kind of where that name comes from that previous novel I mentioned. She's the overprotective mother of Kangaroo. Kangaroo is played by Shin Ha-kyun.
Are you saying kangaroo?
Yes, because we're just... Listen, it's going to be a lot easier if we just make up names for them.
Great. Hey, that's not rude at all.
Oh, man, that's fucked. I don't like that. That doesn't sit great with me.
We can't say your names, so we're just going to give you our own names. Is that okay? Great. Great.
What's your name? Don't care.
Don't care.
Your name's Michael, though.
We've named you Michael. Jesus.
We have, again, Kang Woo, played by Shin Ha-kyun, a very well-known Korean actor. He is the sick childhood friend of Song Kang-ho's character, Sung Hyun. Keep all of this together, folks. It's going to roll right off the tongue.
Yeah, I remember everything already that you said.
He is one of my favorite characters in this movie because he is legitimately the most idiotic man-child I have ever seen in a
goober.
Movie.
Freaking goober energy.
A character whose, like, prolific acting ability involves his nose running throughout the movie.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I don't like boogers and running noses.
Oh, and farting so his mother can smell it to see if he's sick.
That was something.
That was so funny.
Oh my God.
Smells like gastritis. I'll be right back.
No, that was disgusting.
To finish off the cast, because we don't want to get into this too much, we have Park In-hwan as Priest Ro, the blind superior priest to Sang-hyun, who is basically his surrogate father and who is desperate to see again and wants to become a vampire after Sang-hyun reveals to him that, you know, the experiment kind of didn't really work super well. And then old Dae-soo as young Do, who's one of Kang Woo's friends of their Mahjong group, who you'll recognize as the prison owner in Old Boy. Distinctive for the fact that man has many moles all across his face.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I remember those.
Also part of that group, we have Song Yong-chang as Sung Dae, a retired cop and friend to Kang Woo, also part of that group. And Mercedes Cabral as Evelyn, a Filipino wife to Young Do. When she showed up at Cannes for this film, she was awarded most beautiful woman to enter the room or something.
I was going to say, she was gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. You got a thing for the Filipinos.
Well, I do. Yeah, men and women, all of them. Yeah. I was like, wow, beautiful.
Yes. So that's pretty much the cast. Don't want to go into craziness. It's going to be impossible to keep these names straight as it is because, as we all know, I'm a horrible person. I'm just giving them nicknames. Yeah. But we'll do our best here.
Yeah.
So the movie was originally called Bak-jui, which means bat.
Oh. They decided not to be as literal.
Yeah.
Even though it's also still called thirst.
Is also interesting because this is an interesting vampire movie just in terms of vampires.
It basically takes what it likes about vampires. Like, not all of the things that you would typically know about a vampire. It takes, like, just a few, like,
tidbits
and says, because they're not dead.
No, I mean, that's the one thing I noticed, and Steve is the in-house resident vampire man.
Like, but I guess technically, like, they do die, but then also not really.
Yeah, no, they're dead, I would say. I mean, it's less of a death traditional sense of being undead like you would see in normal vampire movies. It is more so like a metamorphosis that happens at like
That's the word. A metamorphosis.
At death, yeah.
Yes.
At the point where you would one would usually die. I mean, as we see, our two main characters, they both do turn at the point in which they are dying. So I would say that it kind of does fall into the lore there.
But it is interesting too, because the one thing I noticed, I point out to Jenna, is that unlike a lot of the kind of, I don't know, kitschy vampire lore, like they have reflections. Clearly we see that throughout, and there's a couple scenes that happen in the bathrooms where he can clearly see himself in the mirror. So that's kind of there. It's called the Bat, but he doesn't transform into a bat at all. He just
hangs upside down like one.
Yeah, that's about it. And then breaks into, you know, people's bathrooms to have conversations with them, which is completely normal behavior. Just like a bat. Mm-hmm. We did used to have a bat in the old house.
His name was Guillermo.
And then he flew away and never came back.
I know. It was really sad. I cried.
She did, but that's beside the point. So this movie, this has the vampire stuff I like. I do like the more bestial vampires, but this was fun because, like, obviously as they're transforming, they got you know, the long hops. They're super strong, as we see with Mrs. Robb, when we'll kind of get into the story a little bit here, right in the middle. Kangaroo gets taken
Scott.
On.
Oh my god!
Gets taken on a fishing trip. And they are plotting to kill him because obviously the priest and Teju have fallen in love, as, you know, happens.
Right.
To point out how not good at sex Sang-hyun is, he repeatedly whacks himself in the dick to keep himself from getting an erection.
I said he's whacking his dick, and you go, no, he's whacking his thigh.
He's whacking his thigh, but I'm sure he's whacking his dick a little bit too.
Do you have a take, Steve?
No, I think it doesn't really matter. It's clear that he's flagellating himself in a very priestly way. So I don't really think it matters whether it's his dick or his thigh.
Anyway, so
we just like to argue.
We do.
Yeah.
We have Kang Wu, who gets drowned in the dam. The dam we know about because the cop brings it up that, hey, you're friends with my friend. You can go fishing here at night. Because, mm-hmm. you know, fishing in a dam in the middle of the night is definitely not suspicious behavior at all.
Super normal.
You can tell, like, policing in Korea is way more laid back.
Uh-huh.
I'm not doing a hot take. You looked like super nervous all of a sudden.
Sometimes I just don't know when it's going to come out of your mouth, you know?
Anyway, he ends up getting drowned. And then Mrs. Ra has a stroke, which is probably one of the best
from
acting.
From too much vodka.
Well, as we learned, we must, you know, be very, you know, aware of how much we're drinking and avoid salty snacks.
And avoid salty snacks.
And also, you know, if your son dies, don't cry so much.
Don't cry. Yeah.
So I thought she was one of my favorite actors in the film. Kim Hae-suk, long-term Korean actor. She's been in it since, I believe, the late 70s. Not going to read her filmography because, let's be honest, nobody's going to recognize anything I say. A lot of Korean dramas. She's written memoirs. I believe some of her children are actors. She's great in this movie.
Yeah, she was a bad bitch. She did really good because a lot of it at first was speaking parts, but then at the end, you know, then the rest of it, she did it. And she did, like, just like her eyes and like the emotion she gave off. I was like, okay, girl.
She was smizing.
She was smizing. Yep. Yeah. She was super happy.
She was very happy.
Yeah, living her best life.
Yeah, I mean, this woman through like the second half of the movie is straight acting with her eyes and tapping her finger while being moved around the house by super strong vampires, basically, and forced to watch TV and forced to gulp down whatever that orange shit they were pouring down her mouth.
It was Tang. Don't you remember Tang?
I honestly thought you were going to make a Korean joke with the name Tang. So I was a little worried now.
Oh, my God.
Steve, how's Iceland going?
Iceland's going great.
This is what happens when we go, let's not do a script this week. Let's straight up do this off the top of our head.
I'm contributing. Yeah, I mean, Steve's just sitting there.
I'm just sitting here. I've made the best jokes of the episode.
That's what you always think.
It's what I always do. That's why I'm on the show. If it's not true, then I should get fired.
Who's going to fire you, Scott?
I don't even have any power, and this is my podcast. I don't even know who runs this fucking thing.
All right, so are we doing a plot synopsis, or are we going to assume that if they're listening, they've watched the movie?
We can do a really, really, really basic plot synopsis.
Let's do that so that we can talk about the fucking movie.
Okay. Catholic priest goes somewhere in Africa. Jenna doesn't know where. Very, very mad about that. Gets a blood transfusion to help treat this virus. Which, one of my favorite parts of this movie was the Top Gun-esque shirtless men
in Africa playing
volleyball. I have to imagine that Sang-hyun was having a really good time with that. Obviously, he gets infected, as we learned from the doctor. It involves getting covered in boils. The boils clump together and they start hemorrhaging. They can hemorrhage on your skin, in your eyes, in your throat, in your lungs. We know he's sick because as we watch him play in his throat, he vomits blood straight. Oh, it's through his flute. His throat.
His flute.
His flute.
It was a recorder, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
It was a recorder.
Mr. Music over here.
Yeah.
Oh, a recorder.
Yeah. Because all of us had a recorder in third grade and brought those home to our parents and drove them insane.
Not me. I had a real flute. But anyways.
Anyway. We know this because he puked through the flute. He is sick. He dies. They pronounce him dead. He wakes back up saying a prayer. Oh my God, he's now a saint. So when he gets back, the parishioners of the various, whatever Korean diocese they're at, think he's now the bandaged saint, because obviously he's a vampire. He's got to be bandaged up, otherwise the sun will burn him. And he pretty much just goes back to doing his thing, which is apparently magic trick for kids of cancer and hanging out with patients to give last rites. We are introduced to a very large man who tells us a story about sponge cake, who basically becomes his more or less humane
source
of drinking blood, because the guy goes into a coma. So clearly he can drain his blood when he goes and visits. Nobody's going to know. He doesn't drink that much. In the process, he runs into his old friend Kang Woo's mother, Mrs. Ra. She says, pray for my son. He's got cancer. This is also where we meet Taeju, who was an orphan girl that was left in the care of Mrs. Ra, who then is eventually married to Kang Woo, because that's completely normal behavior, obviously.
Yeah, that was weird.
It is a little weird. She stopped sleeping in my bed and sleeps in Kang Woo's now.
Like, okay.
She knows who Sang-hyun is, because Sang-hyun, when he was an orphan being raised by the church, would go over to the house
for noodles. She was
yes.
real proud of herself for serving this kid. I was like, we get it, okay, chill, you gave him noodles, whoop-de-doo.
So obviously now Sang-hyun's drinking blood from this comatose patient. He can't deal with the facts, so he jumps out of the window at one point, can't kill himself because, hey, you're already dead, stupid. So basically, it's just trying to learn to live with this. Ends up hanging out with Kang Woo and the family for their Mahjong games. That house gave me flashbacks to my Korean friend growing up, with like the wallpaper and the shelves everywhere. Like, their house was just wood.
Their house didn't match one bit. It was just madness.
It was awesome. I absolutely love that house.
Different word for it, but
it was beautiful.
Okay.
Just saying. To get back to this, obviously, as we learn, Taeju, her life's pretty much miserable. She starts having an affair with the priest, which is completely normal, obviously. We see his wiener in this movie. It's the first mainstream Korean wiener in Korean cinema history.
I told Scott to rewind it, and he wouldn't. I wanted to pause it. I wanted to see if it was real or not.
Pretty sure that was a real wiener, yes.
Okay.
Listen, if that was not a prosthetic wiener.
Prosthetic.
Prosthetic. It was a prosthetic wiener.
So you paused it yourself when you watched it first.
Well, I had to examine it just to make sure.
But then when you watched it with me, you said, "Don't look, Jenna. Don't look. You might be upset with what you got now."
Oh, yeah, because he was really hanging trunk. Anyway, as we kind of get these back and forth stories, the downside to this movie, even though I love this movie, is that it is long. It's a long, drawn-out movie, and the fact that it's a vampire movie, and it's an erotic thriller, and it's a weird domestic story, too, that could have fit to the theme of the when we had a theme for the show back in the day instead of the monthly themes. But just going to put that out there that was a great idea. Because it's domestic.
Well, we're doing flashbacks. A new thing now. We're doing Lupercalia.
Basically, they have an affair. She falls in love with them. Teju wants to become a vampire. She gets more and more unhinged. They kill King Wu by drowning him in a lake. Obviously, Sung-yoon, he goes underwater. We learn there's a village underneath the dam. He buries the dude inside a closet and keeps a rock on it to make sure he doesn't float out so they can't find him. The priest has this side story where he wants to see really badly and wants to become a vampire. And, you know,
he said, nah.
Sang-hyun, who's trying to be, I don't know, a morally good Catholic vampire of sorts, won't allow it.
Yeah, and then instead he just murders him.
Yeah, he just straight up murders him.
Yeah, what a good Catholic vampire.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Could be worse.
Could it?
He didn't diddle any kids.
True. Mm-hmm. Good point, Scott. Great point.
Great point. And then pretty much from the Mrs. Rao having a stroke onward is when the movie really becomes the thriller. We got a pretty damn good score by Joe Young-wook, who has done music with Park Chan-wook before. It's got your typical, you know, rapid violin music. It really does flip. For some reason, Teju wants the house painted white.
They want it to feel like it's daylight.
Yeah. Feel like it's daylight.
But instead, they made it more look like a mental hospital, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I was like, you got... chill.
Oh, we should also probably mention that the reason why Sang-hyun is willing to kill Taiju's husband, Kang-woo, is because she is told that he, Kang-woo, is abusing her. What we learn is she's just stabbing herself with scissors.
Yes, yeah, stabbing.
Because she's fucking insane.
Not just hitting, literal stabbing. Her inner thighs.
Yeah.
That made me ill.
We also seen several scenes where she's also like, Kang-woo's sleeping, and she's like,
what are you laughing at?
That made me ill.
That made me ill. Anyway. We know she's basically, as we learn, that she's pretty much unhinged from
a massive manipulator.
Yes. And then all shit breaks loose. Mrs. Ra is able to communicate during Mahjong with her bloody fingernail and some blinks that they killed Kang-woo. Now, in the actual novel, Therese Raquan, that doesn't happen. She's trying to, it's the same story, but instead the partygoers think that, you know, She's saying, they're taking good care of me instead. So this does kind of flip that over a little bit. And then from there...
They had to speed up the movie.
They had to speed up the movie.
They were like, shit, we're already an hour and a half in.
It's an hour. This is a 2 hour and 14 minute movie. This is kind of long for a movie that we've covered before. Yeah, and then a bloodbath ensues. And of course, one of my favorite endings to a movie is... Sung-hyun takes Mrs. Ra and Taiju to a cliffside, makes sure that he can kind of, I don't know, find some penance. A, by trying to prove to his fanatical followers.
I was like, dude, just leave that be.
Yeah, he really wanted to prove that he wasn't a saint by assaulting a woman because...
What was the logic there was...
My theory is that he didn't want to be seen as a saint.
What do you think, Steve? Because I was like, I'm confused by this.
I have a lot of feelings about this movie specifically, especially the end. Insofar as the attempted / fake pseudo assault of the one, I don't know what you want to call them, you know, cultists, whatever the fuck.
Adherent, something like that.
Yeah.
About.
that was one of the bigger things that I think was a flaw with the movie overall. I think that this, that like the establishment of him being like this pseudo saint, you know, living saint or miracle worker, and on top of being like just a good priest, was like kind of unnecessary. I think it's one of the like multiple little side storylines or threads that kind of detract from the movie. You know, you just mentioned the length, which is like 2 hours and 14 minutes. I think it's 2:10 at the start of credits. You know, it's still a really, really good movie that I like a lot, but I think in general shit like that could be cut out because I don't think it really hits in a specific way. Now, there's always a chance that there's context that we're missing, right? That there's maybe something specifically Korean or whatever that this is like attempting to speak on. Like maybe there was some like fucked up Korean like fake prophet at the time.
Oh, you mean the Reverend Moon?
Well, I mean, you
know, no, I know what you're saying.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Something from their culture that we might not know about.
Right, there's always a chance of that, but I think that it just doesn't really land in the kind of the greater story of what the rest of the movie is going on about. You know, I think that it could be construed to be like the final big breaking of his faith, right? I mean, he leaves the church, but he's still acting virtuously. He's still even praying with people or for people when they ask. People still refer to him as Father. Maybe it was like it's supposed to be symbolic of like truly breaking away from all of that, in addition to like just the people, you know, not wanting to see him as some sort of prophet or miracle worker. But I just, that whole plot line doesn't really land for me. Neither does the plot line with the ghost of Kang Wu, kind of.
That was, I mean, trippy, like, yeah. It was cool, but I was like, why is this happening?
That's something that happens in the Therese Raquan novel, is that they're haunted by the guy that they kill because of their guilt. And that whole same storyline is that now that they can be together, but the combination of their guilt and the fact that they learned that they fucking hate each other.
Right, it's not fun anymore.
Yeah, it's not.
Right,
yeah.
And that I get, but I think, I mean, the amount of time, and having that in a novel makes sense. The having the depiction of it in this movie, in the amount of time that it takes beyond like just showing the guilt in another way, you know, showing that in this very, very over the top way, which is like interesting to watch as a film, but when, again, I'm not like this guy that like needs every movie to be fucking short as hell, but it's like that added like 15 minutes alone where it could have been something implied. It's visually interesting, but I mean,
the transformation of the house is one of the best set pieces of this, like completely painted white.
Yeah.
But it's like, way it's shot with these fluorescent lights, it's like almost like got like blue and gray to it. It's really bright, and I watched it too with my theater lights on, so like you get like hit with like white light, which is also kind of juxtaposing, you know, he's a bad guy now, but he's in this kind of what would be, at least in Christianity, white, sacred, unblemished, obviously is, I think, partially what that reason is. But to get back to Kang Wu real quick, I thought that was, I get why you don't like it, but it also has one of the funniest scenes ever in a movie.
When they're having sex,
and his bloated, wet corpse is just in between them, smiling as they're humping.
I was cackling.
It's hysterical. I mean, it's again, it's funny, and it's not like
the actor does a fantastic job.
It's funny. It's visually interesting, and I get what it's doing.
If there were edits to take, that's he would edit that out.
Well, yeah. If you want to know, Park Chan-wook, the actual director's cut is 16 minutes longer, and it's his preferred version of watching a movie because there's extra content that is not in release. However, you can't get that one unless you're in Korea, I think.
See, I liked it because it answered all my questions.
I mean, maybe, I guess. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of questions and symbolism that is unanswered, though. And I think that this movie, maybe it's one of the rare cases where the director's cut really does actually fix it, and it's not just like self-aggrandizement bullshit of like all of the things I made are good. Because I do feel like what we end up with is like is a movie that has a lot of tonal shifts where it becomes like a different movie several times, and that can be really cool and interesting, or it can kind of bog down something, and some of it works here and some of it doesn't, right? Like you have like your kind of like traditional almost vampire story in the beginning, the longing of blood, whatever, and then you have this like middle part where it's their like marital, their, you know, their new relationship is falling apart, right? And it's which is like a marriage story but with Korean vampires, and
which
and then
makes it therefore a better movie.
Yeah, and then you have the, and then the last act is like this, like is like Mr. and Mrs. Smith for like a minute, and then you have like the climax, which is like is I mean all of it is good. I just don't feel like it stitches together perfectly in all these different sections.
Yeah, I feel like you can kind of see the seams. I don't disagree with that. But also, I think, like, the big reveal that, obviously, Mrs. Ra, because they confess, obviously, in front of her, because she's catatonic, essentially. She can't do anything, so they don't give a shit. When they're at the Mahjong game, and they figure it out, and it's just that separation of, like, everybody staring at them, and Taiju just, like,
starts
that creepy-ass smile she gives is fucking... For an actress that won a competition to become an actress, is phenomenal in this. I mean, I think everybody, all the main actors and actresses were definitely nominated in various award shows in Korea and Asia. I know the actress that plays Mrs. Ra, Kim Hae-suk, won a couple awards for her role. I feel like the acting's super good in this. Mm-hmm. And especially...
Yeah.
Kim Ok-bin, who's like, you know, you meet her and she's kind of like this apathetic, like homely girl, and you see the glow up when she becomes the vampire,
right,
she's
heels.
We wear shoes in the house now, like they do in the States. Like she's like reinventing herself.
That. I thought that was so funny.
Like she's in like, you know, she's in this nice dress.
She's got her hair all did.
Oh yeah. But like her unhingedness is like super creepy. Like she is.
I feel like the movie, I see what Steve is saying, where it was kind of all over the place, but I think that's what I liked about it, because it was just like very like an emotional roller coaster of sorts, which is how I live my life at times.
Yes.
So I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. I feel this.
I mean,
but I can see why someone would be bothered by it. I feel like it can go either way.
Yeah, the seams are there. It does. Again, I know we talk about censor all the time, and not to say that we're shitting on it, but like you can see Act 1, Act 2, Act 3 in this movie very clearly. I love this movie. Yeah. I think because this is one of my favorite... it's my favorite vampire movie, and it's one of my favorite horror by one of my favorite directors. I'm super biased in my appreciation of this movie, so I am well aware of that, but I really think... I know there's things that could have been taken out. We probably didn't need to watch them play Mahjong three times in this movie.
It made me want to play Mahjong, so maybe they were like had a secret sponsorship with the Mahjong brand.
Yeah.
I was like, hell yeah, I want to play.
I also have no idea how you play Mahjong, but apparently...
I feel like it's like kind of like gin rummy, but like...
I don't know. In the book, the woman is playing, they have dominoes. So it's something, I guess it's similar to that in a way. There's a way to score. It looks like you have a hand like in poker when you win or whatever. So again, I have no idea. I don't think I need to see like super so many. I don't think we need to see them like their love affair like multiple times.
Okay. I liked it. I was like, ooh, Scott, let's pause the movie.
Yeah.
He said no. Come on.
I don't know. This movie made you like incredibly horny, which is okay, worrisome so, yeah, to me.
Can we talk about that?
It's absolutely.
It's such a horny movie.
Yeah, and I've been woo.
Yeah, you've been.
I've been wild.
You've been assaulting me in my sleep.
Oh, stop.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, this is a horny movie. As horny as watching a priest have sex for the first couple times of his natural born life can be.
But it was like the danger and the that it's.
It was the goddamn biting that got you all. Oh,
the biting, but. Like, it was the fact that he's not supposed to be, you know, like...
Forbidden love.
Forbidden. I was like, what's that word?
Yeah, well, you know, if the priest is allowed to start fucking...
You guys said...
Catholicism starts to lose its luster, I think, real quick.
You guys said boobs. I gave you boobs and beast, so...
Yeah?
A twofer.
Boobs and beast and blood.
And blood.
Because there's a lot of projectile blood in this movie.
It was, definitely...
Tastefully done.
Yeah, tastefully done. Steve, did you like the horniness level?
Or yeah.
Like, that's enough.
No, this is like the first time in a long time that I've jerked off to a movie.
While watching with the boys.
I'm going to tell Michelle not to listen to this episode.
I didn't watch it with... Dan watched it for like 5 minutes and then they had to go. So I ended up watching it by myself. But yeah. No, it's a fucking sick movie. It's like... It's awesome. That's the especially on the horny scale. I mean, shit.
It's a 5-star horn dog movie for sure.
Yeah, oh, I like massively. That part.
Yeah,
yeah.
Now, can I talk about one other thing that I gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd?
Okay, let's. You have another grievance?
Yeah, and this is where I knocked. I would have automatically knocked a whole star off for this because it's something that I just can't. It's so distracting that I can't get past in a movie.
I feel like I know this is what it's going to be.
I don't.
I feel like I know what this is.
I want to hear what you think it is. What is it?
I think you're annoyed that at times they're speaking English in this movie because that did kind of bother me and caught me off guard a couple times.
Oh, no, that doesn't bother me.
Oh, okay. I thought that may have annoyed your flow of the film.
No. It makes sense. And I watch enough foreign shit that I'm not saying like that in a shitty way. It's just I'm used to because they do that in a lot of foreign movies. That'll happen. Sometimes it's funny. It's especially bad in Italian stuff because a lot of times Italians even now still have like that old like 70s 80s Italian style like ethos through how they make things. So even when you're listening to like a modern Italian show when they speak English, it's like the actor does not speak English. They just were taught like phonetically how to say the line that they need to say. So it sounds really shitty. This, it's like everyone was seemed fluent. So when they were speaking, so it wasn't too much of a distraction. No, the thing that bothers me and that bothers me in any movie that I see it in is the use of day for night. Now, we've talked about this briefly in the past, but for those that don't remember, I'm looking at Jenna, like, trying to sound it out, because she has no fucking idea what I'm talking about. What day for night means is when you film a movie, you film during the day, and then try to color correct it so that it looks like nighttime.
Oh, so you would color correct
like
the sky.
When Tai Ju is running away in several scenes, it's very noticeable that they darkened
see,
it.
See, this is where like I'm just a dumb dumb. Like I'm not a movie person like that. You're a dumb dumb.
No. So a lot of people, they don't know the words for it, and some people might like. So the final sequence when they're at the cliff waiting for Dawn.
Yes.
Did that seem like off to you at all when you were watching it?
I guess yes. Now that you say that, I just didn't like. I guess it did more look. It looked more like day than it was like night when they got there.
Right. So that's.
But I just thought that was maybe how it looked in Korea. I don't know.
They don't have a different son there. So
you guys wait. We're all on the same planet. What?
That's like when what's Eugene Levy's fucking obnoxious son? Yeah.
Dan?
Yeah.
Oh, Dan Levy. Yeah.
That piece of shit.
Oh, okay.
Did you see a few weeks?
He a goof?
He's a total piece of shit.
Why?
He's so annoying, and he's like super lib, but like interminably stupid. So like, he posted something on Twitter the other week, which was like a picture of like China launching a rocket, and he was like. China's making a new sun because of course they are.
What?
I don't even know what that fucking means.
I don't even get it.
Because hold on. I got it. The problem is, it's been like I don't follow him. I'm just terminally online, so
okay.
I see it.
Steve's terminal.
I'm trying to find it now, and I can't because it's literally been like wiped from the internet, which is something that people say can't happen. Yeah, but like when you're talking about like celebrities and stuff, this shit is like literally like almost becomes like can be made impossible to find.
Because it was dumb what he said, and they said delete. Yeah, his publicity team. They're making their own son.
Yeah, it was fucking crazy. And now I can't find it.
It's just those weird neo-lib comments on Twitter where it's just like people will comment about something while completely ignoring the hypocrisy of what they're saying, you know?
Like, was he saying that because it's bad for the environment? I just guess I don't get it.
No, he was saying it because he, like, everyone has to be like, The new thing in liberalism, one of the new things in there right now is this being completely anti-China and trying.
I thought
to,
that was like a con- I thought that's what conservatives were.
No,
anti-China.
They
love the business aspect.
Exactly,
of it.
Liberals act like it's this complete fucking threat to the, like, China is like an existential threat to reality.
Oh.
And yeah, now I can't fucking find this, but because it's literally been fucking like erased. But basically,
it was China. They erased it.
The Chinese did it.
I don't want to get on like the super tangent. Jesus Christ! But like, literally, it's like saying shit like that. And I don't know what the fuck I was even talking about.
You were talking about the day and night.
Oh my god.
It's like day and night. His thoughts just shifted.
Oh, fuck. Oh, yeah, no. I'm saying it's not like Korea made their own sun, and so
that's what I thought.
And so it looks different. That was the whole joke. Jesus Christ.
I honestly thought you were gonna go with like a Land of the Rising Sun joke, and I was like, no, Steve, that's Japan.
Yeah, see, you know what?
That would have been my joke.
Yeah, because you would have confused Korea for Japan, which I would not have. No, so like the whole point being like you see it like really, really bad at the end. Like you can see it on the clothes. You can see it in the reflection of the car and everything. And it's just kind of like color corrected to be blue. And I don't know, like day for night can look cool. Actually, I'm not like one of these like super you can never do it. But day for night can look cool when you're doing it on purpose to make something look weird. But when you're like, if you're trying to make something look ethereal or look out of place or look like disconcerting, then use that technique and kind of morph that shit.
Why do they do it then?
Because it's really hard to shoot darkness.
Is it a cost thing?
Like, well, you need to, I mean, because you're still shooting at night, you still do need lights.
Of course.
Yeah, so
it's,
like,
it's really, there's a technical difficulty in doing that because you're shooting night, but you're shooting night with lights, and it's it's a lot easier to do.
And the thing is, you don't usually see it in like a mainstream movie. I mean, this was like a relatively big movie in Korea. Like, this is had a decent amount of backing. Like, you see this shit in amateur movies and like shot on VHS, like movies from the 80s and 90s, or like even like amateur shit nowadays where people like just film something on a cheap HDR camera and then go into like their cracked copy of After Effects to do all the editing. Like, so that's the thing that makes it even more striking and fucking weird that's being done in this movie.
Because it's kind of weird too, because this was a joint film, a Korea US film.
I guess
too.
You wonder if that's what they were going for. Or, you know, like, who knows? What? Maybe that's what they wanted.
I think it was just them kind of cutting corners a little bit.
Yeah,
I think my gripe with the movie was...
You either do it because you can't film darkness, because you don't have the lighting and shit, which I don't think this is the case for this, or you do it because, fuck it, we don't have time. Or, you know, it's either you don't have the budget, you don't have the means, or you don't have the time. It's really the only way.
And they should have had all of it.
They should have had all of it.
I mean, it's a movie that banked $13 million, and I believe it cost somewhere around $5 million. So, I mean, even $5 million for a horror movie that is very good like this, that's not a whole lot of money, you know?
And I'm not like, I like the, you know, the movie magic of like, the making of movies, like I find it cool and interesting. I'm not the kind of person that's going to be like, this movie is not technically whatever, so I don't like it. But when it detracts from the film that I'm watching, like when I see it and I can't, like I'm being distracted by it, like looking so fucked up, then it's a big thing. And Day for Night, it's so hard to get past because it just looks so obvious and so shitty once you're like aware of it, or if you're watching like a really crappy movie. Like Battlefield Earth, it's one of the many things bad about that movie, but every scene where it's night, it's just
not
like,
that it's an L. Ron Hubbard fucking novel come to life.
No, that's a crazy movie, but it's like the entire, every time there's a scene at night and it's space, so it's a lot, it's all just like oversaturated blue garbage because they're shooting Day for Night.
Yeah, I get it. I think my one gripe with the movie is something I point out to Jenna that I did like, is that the use of special effects in this wasn't horrendous.
No.
Like when we see his boils go away, but to get back to the end of the movie, the one fucking thing I completely block out of my mind when they're looking at the ocean and it turns blood red and there's
blood whales.
Blood whales. Ah, God.
I liked the little baby beluga blood whales.
Yeah, I was watching this last night while Jenna was at a concert and I had a couple beers and I forgot and I just started laughing hysterically, like unintentionally, like cackling like a madman because I forgot just how unneeded that part of that finale was.
It
needed.
Was like, I don't know, it was giving me Lisa Frank vibes. and I was just like, I'm here.
Trapper Keeper vibes.
I'm here for it, but I thought this was a serious movie. Have I been duped? Like, it was odd.
Yeah, no, I
still like it, but
as my final score, I originally gave this 5, but everything, I changed things at the end. This is still my favorite vampire movie. Again, favorite director. One of my favorite films. I am going to give it 4.5. I am only taking off a half because of those technical things we did talk about, because I don't disagree with Steve on those. But I still, I fucking love this movie, even if the long runtime, even though it's kind of stitched together. I think it's, especially for me, who's very ADHD, a movie this long that holds my attention this well, and the acting is so good for somebody like me who loves movies and has gotten more and more and more and more and more.
Movies?
I know.
Oh my God.
It's a 4.5 for me. It's one of my favorites.
I'm giving it a 4.
4 stars made Jenna very horny.
Yeah, 5 stars in that. I think I really enjoyed it. I liked the whole story. I enjoyed that at first I kind of was like, oh, and had a soft spot for Taeju. But then by the end of it, I was like, she's batshit. Like, but But it was still like enjoyable, right? It didn't make me, I wasn't like, oh no, I rooted for the wrong person. Cause sometimes I get mad at myself when I do that. But
yeah, if Jenna ever gets duped with like a shocking twist ending and she doesn't know it, she's very mad. Yeah,
I don't like to be duped.
I rooted for the wrong person.
I was just kind of like, well, you know what? Whatever. Like, she's a freaking crazy vampire now. What are we going to do? It is what it is. So I really, really enjoyed the whole storyline. I will say it was a tad long. So that was just a tad.
Yeah.
Just a tad. And I also feel like there were things, like Steve said, like the, what are we calling them? The cultists or whatever.
The devotees.
I feel like it would have gotten the point across if he just like did his work at the hospital and that, you know, I just feel like there was a little bit of that, you know, that was a little just, so four for me.
Four for Jenna. And then Steve, you said four for you.
Yeah. It's a four for me for the same reasons. I would have been like kind of like an, almost an automatic, like half or full star loss for like those technical things that I mentioned that I couldn't get past the multiple uses of day for night. My other gripes, like I said earlier, are definitely kind of, I feel the plot is a little disjointed and I feel it's like a little too long. I don't think that it's a bad movie because of any of those things. I do even enjoy those things. It's one of those cases where I like pretty much everything about this movie. I just think it would be a better movie if it were a little tighter. And so that's kind of...
Yes. A little tighter. That's a great...
We all want something just to be a little bit tighter.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Nope.
Yeah, but I do think this is a very good vampire movie. It hits much of the same same veins as, no pun intended, Let the Right One In. It hits a lot of similar... kind of story beats and whatnot. I have a hard time trying to say anything positive that isn't very like obvious about this movie, but that's not because I dislike it. It's because I like it so much that I can't help but think of ways it would be better. So I definitely recommend seeing this movie, especially if you like Korean cinema. And I mean this in a very, very nice way. This movie is extremely Korean.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, it has the vibe, the Korean movie vibes, and that's basically because this director almost invented like what the modern Korean movie looks like. So
I think too, that's why I was comparing it, because I like Park Chan-wook, so I was comparing it to Old Boy. Yeah. I knew it was going to be different, but I just think because I love Old Boy so much. I think just because Old Boy has more action in it too. Yeah. That's really like,
and it's awesome. it's a tighter movie.
Yeah. Like Steve said, that's our new thing we're going to say. This tighter. But like, I feel like this movie, it wasn't as action, you know, actiony. So I was missing that part of it. Yeah. You know, like the other one had sex and action. This one had just more sex, which I'm not complaining about. But
yeah.
I just feel I would have liked a little more. I don't know. Like the deaths were quick, you know?
Yeah.
They weren't like all.
And they're not even maybe super a little more gory or anything.
Maybe a little more of a tussle.
Well, you know, I don't want to like have like get derailed and have a whole nother conversation at like the outro. But I really liked, that's one of the things I loved the most about the movie was how quick the deaths are, because it kind of. One of the main things was this like kind of loss of humanity, right? And like the, and then like, you know, life and death and good evil kind of shit. So the fact that like
they were supposed to be humane, the deaths.
Well, his death, he wanted to be humane. Yeah,
sure. Hers,
Sang-hyun is like the entire time he doesn't want to kill, but
right.
But we see how easily killing could be. It's not like. He has to go out and, you know, I might get killed myself or whatever. There's no threat there. He could easily dismantle as many people as he wanted to, as he needs to, and he's actively refraining from it. So the fact that when we do see the deaths be very, very quick and very brutal in their simplicity, like when the one Mahjong guy just gets like his neck just snaps.
Snapped, yeah.
Like, you just punch in the throat once and his whole neck just fucking snaps. Like, that's crazy, you know? And so it's kind of like these short bursts of violence really, like, punctuate the level of power that these vampires have. But, yeah. So, like, actually, you're wrong, Jenna. So.
Okay. I'm always wrong. I'm never allowed to have an opinion.
Listen, Steve's allowed to say you're wrong. I say you're wrong. I get beat, so. So, I guess now as we get towards the end of Lupercalia, we get the big reveal of what the final movie that we'll be covering this month is.
Yep.
I'm very excited. I am going to do notes for this one because there's a lot of stuff to cover with it. I'm going to do it more short and sweet because clearly this wasn't as smooth as I thought it would be off the top of my head.
It was a test, and so the thing you is, failed.
Yeah, you can do it without notes. You just still have to prepare.
Yeah, Scott's like, I didn't write anything. I was like, are you sure you don't want to write anything? No, I'll have my computer in front of me. I'm like, okay.
Okay, so it didn't work as well. It's fine. It's fine.
Let's all tell Scotty sucks.
No, I do. But that's beside the point. You're going to really think I suck because next week we are doing, to cap off Lupercalia, Blood Sucking Freaks, one of the original Troma released films, but not a Troma film. It is a exploitation film of many flavors, sex, blood, brains, terrible acting. There's a little person. There's so much depravity in this film.
I'm looking it
up. Go ahead and Google that. Just give yourself a little.
Oh my God, Scott.
Oh, yeah, I've been looking forward
to it. Do you guys hate me?
No, like, but this is the fun for
just,
us.
Do you just wake up every morning and you're like, how can we ruin Jenna's life?
You have no idea yet.
It's got a 2.3 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Which is pretty high.
And a 4.8 out of 10 on IMDb.
Out of 10, yeah.
Oh, God. Ooh, there's a guy named Seamus, though. I do like that name. I'm prepared. I think I'm gonna drink a little bit before we watch this.
That's fine. That's you're gonna need to.
Yeah.
So we'll end Lupercalia like that. And then next week we'll reveal what the theme for March will be. Doing that because I have no idea what the theme for March will be.
I thought we were doing all the Leprechaun movies.
God damn it. Fuck.
Leprechaun
Shut up,
in the
Steve.
Hood, Leprechaun in Space, the Leprechaun remake by
I thought you would forget.
No, we could also expand it broadly into being like Irish or Irish themed horror movies.
Okay.
But we got to do
loves,
at least
Steve
one
is like
Leprechaun.
anything north and like cold. I like that.
Yeah.
That's Steve.
We're going to find a movie that's just a bunch of Irish people drinking themselves to just death.
Anything that says the least amount of talking and is in the hills. That's for Steve.
Yeah, if it's cold, somewhat Scandinavian, and artfully shot.
Lots of blondes.
Yeah.
Preferably big tits.
Big tits.
Tits
are cool.
Tits are cool.
That's your second comment about boobs today.
Okay.
Boobs are cool.
Boobs.
Boobs. We will have the
Patreon.
The Patreon will be on released to 228. We had to push it back, namely because Steve didn't have time to edit certain things. And
it's all Steve's fault.
No, it's also my fault because I had to bartend till like 4 a.m. multiple days. And it's when Steve was like, let's record on Saturday. And I got home.
Oh, yeah, you guys never did?
I got home at 4:30 and
decided. It's my fault, apparently.
Nope, that's definitely my fault. So okay. we also talked about it. We're going to have at least 2 after-hours shows for you guys every month. Probably more because we have opinions and stuff we want to talk about that aren't movie-related. And also, there'll be 2 episodes of Schlocked and Loaded with the interviews. I have a lot more interviews set up with a lot more people, so we'll have more content available. So we're going to double up on everything. $3 to sign up, $5 for everything, every single thing that we're offering. You can check the Instagram and the Twitter for that information. I'm going to update it. It'll be ready on 2/28. We'll go live. It'll technically be everything for March, but we wanted to start it off at the beginning of the week so you had access to everything then. And yeah, Steve, where do we find you on the internets?
Find me at RudeSpeaker on Twitter, on Letterboxd, on Spotify. Yes, Spotify. check out my music on Spotify. I released another new song a couple weeks ago. So check all that out.
You're not going to take your music off Spotify and protest?
No.
No, you said no, I don't.
Oh, me? Money. I don't give a shit about that. So
is that still going on?
Yes.
Probably.
We're over it.
It's like 2 weeks old. Nobody cares anymore.
Boring. Over. check my music out there. Additionally, next week, maybe a week after too, if you remember, a while back I did an episode with my buddy John. We've been working on our own podcast that we're gonna start putting out, so we're gonna put out the first couple episodes of that as a free additional episode with Groovy Little Spook Show. We don't have a name or anything yet, but you'll see and find out that, and then you'll be able to find and follow us elsewhere. But you know, we'll give you a little taste of that, some extra content for the piggies, and that's it.
Jenna, what is your letterbox and how do we ignore you anywhere else? Do you remember your letterbox name this time?
Spider X Queen.
It's still not that.
Yes, it is. That's what
I'm typing it in right now. Hang on. Spider X.
Why does everyone gotta call me dumb today? I'm sick of this.
Dumb, but it's just not.
You just told me I was wrong.
It's Yenna.
No.
I'm looking right now, and Spider X Queen, nothing comes up.
Oh my god.
Spider-Man No Way Home comes up.
TBD, ask me next week.
I'm pretty sure it's just Yenna with 48 N's.
Oh my god. God, you guys. Oh, what am I, an 80-year-old woman that doesn't know how to use the internet?
Correct.
I'm not saying it. It just seems to be with games. Your recent likes are Bohemian Rhapsody, The Breakfast Club, Goodfellas, and Ratatouille.
That was definitely me. That checks out 100%.
Okay. Okay, just to be clear, if you want to search Jenna on Letterboxd via URL, it's letterboxd.com/SpiderXQueen/. But
yeah, see?
But you have
but
to
your
search.
Your username.
Yeah, you have to search for Yenna.
Oh my god. You guys, I'll figure it. I'll fix it next week. I'll figure it out. Okay?
Don't worry, folks. She's in HR.
Stop saying stuff about my life.
And if you want to find me at the Ghoul Daddy and all the cool places where kids hang out on the internet, I took a small sabbatical from the internet really this week, besides posting some stupid thoughts, and it's wonderful. I'm so happy I don't do like a ton of Twitter stuff.
Yeah, were you having
a
mental breakdown or something? Because you texted me, you're like, they track your data on the internet, Jenna, blah, blah, blah.
Well, no,
like,
that's just
being
a conspiracy man. I deleted my Snapchat.
Jenna,
I got
you liked but did not rate Uncut Gems. Can we talk about this?
That movie. That's the one with Adam Sandler, right?
Yeah. He goes back to school.
That's yeah. He pees in his pants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't know yet. Give me a break, all right? God.
I'm seeing okay then.
Seeing some irregularities in your rating system, man.
I'm seeing then as well that despite all of what you did, you liked several films and not rated them, but you've also said that you watched some films without even liking them, such as Back to the Future and The Matrix.
I don't like them, but I watched them.
You don't like Up?
Did I not like it?
You did not like Disney Pixar's Up. You did not like Disney Pixar's Up, nor did you like Disney Pixar's The Incredibles, nor did you like Disney Pixar's The Toy Story.
You guys, I don't think I know how to use this. Oh my god. My cheeks hurt from laughing.
If you want to follow the show for some reason, at Groovy Little Pod on the Facebooks. The
you don't
Instagrams.
Like Titanic or Jurassic Park?
Did I? What?
We have never watched any of these movies together, by the way, except for The Matrix. We have never watched Disney Pixar's Up.
I've watched it.
Watching movies without me, huh?
When before I met you.
Wait, okay. You liked, but did not rate The Godfather. I mean, come on.
Okay, that we gotta take
what
her.
What the fuck is happening?
You lose
there.
Your Dago card.
I
for that.
Didn't know I was supposed to. You guys, leave me alone. I'm still figuring it out.
Did she rate Goodfellas? Did she give Goodfellas 5 stars?
No, she didn't rate Goodfellas.
What the fuck, Jenna?
She didn't rate Goodfellas at all.
God.
She
damn.
Did rate Parasite 5 stars.
Yeah, hell yeah.
She rated the Breakfast Club 5 stars.
Hell yeah. Oof. John Bender, my God.
You rated Vamp 3.5. You rated Hereditary 4.5. You rated When Animals Dream 4. And that's all of the ratings that you've done.
Yeah, I'm working on it, okay? I need to get it together.
I'm going to get home from work at like 2 in the morning, and she's just going to be sitting there just like, I've been rating every movie I've ever watched, so Steve will stop yelling at me. Her hair is going to be pulled out in clumps. Yeah. And she's still not going to have rated Goodfellas.
Yeah, that checks out.
It does check out.
Steve, stop creeping on my shit.
I'm really bothered.
I'm bothered. How many times have we watched Goodfellas during the pandemic? At least like 38 times.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know how to use
Goodbye. Stay groovy. I'm going to go beat Jenna now.